I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, in anticipation of Christian Theological Seminary's upcoming Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference, we're going to talk about the mental and spiritual health of people who have endured much, veterans. My guests are Dr. Roger Brook, Professor of Psychology and Director of the Military Psychological Services at Duquesne University, and Dr. Felicity Kelcourse, a mental health counselor and professor at the Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the mental and spiritual health of veterans. Next week is Christian Theological Seminary's 19th Annual Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference, and it features Dr. Roger Brook, who's a professor of psychology and director of the Military Psychological Services at Duquesne University. He's also written extensively on the issue of mental health and spiritual health for veterans. He is one of my guests joining us by Skype. Also joining me here in the studio is Dr. Felicity Kelcourse, a mental health counselor and professor at the Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hi, John, and hello, everybody.
It's good to have you both here, one of you in person, obviously, and one of you via modern technology. And I should also say to our listeners that you are invited to join the conversation, and you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Dr. Kelcourse, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about this psychotherapy and spirituality conference. What the details are, and you know how you settled on the theme this year.
Yes, well, as you mentioned, it's our 19th year of hosting the conference at Christian Theological Seminary. We do have other supporting organizations to be sponsors for the conference. I have to say that I thought it would be very appropriate for Christian Theological Seminary to host it because we're a little unique being a freestanding seminary that also has two master's level degree programs for counselors. So what does this mean to bring a spiritual awareness together with a psychological awareness? And that's really the theme of the conference. We don't expect any of the speakers to have a particular approach to spirituality, because we assume that anyone who has the well-being of persons and relationships in mind, that there's a spiritual dimension to that.
Dr. Brook, I know you're going to be delivering a lecture titled The Soldier's Heart, A Moral and Spiritual Calling. Could you give us a taste of what you plan to be talking about?
Yes, thank you. What we now call post-traumatic stress disorder was only instituted as a psychiatric category in 1980, but there are terms that have a long history. People will remember shell shock and battle fatigue and so on. My favorite term is the soldier's heart, which is what the wounds of war, the psychological wounds of war, were known as during the American Civil War. They would say that he's suffering from a soldier's heart. I particularly like that term because it speaks directly to that emotional, moral, and spiritual center of our lives, which is the place of the wound. The other thing I'd say is that what we now call PTSD and have interpreted, therefore, or set up as a psychiatric condition with a list of symptoms, has actually been named and ritually addressed in all traditional warrior cultures around the world and through history. And I can talk a bit more about that if you like.
Oh, yes, I would.
But in those, what I will say, just as an introduction, is that in all those traditional cultures, from the Plains Indians to the Xhosa of South Africa and the Maoris and the Celts and so on, in all those traditional cultures, the psychological wounds of war were understood as essentially moral and spiritual. And so we draw from the lessons from those traditional cultures in the way we work with veterans. Whatever the benefits of having a diagnosis of PTSD, and there are considerable benefits, I don't knock that at all, it does have some cascading negative consequences. The very first of which is that by looking at the sort of the symptoms of being either numb or hypervigilant and so on, looking at the symptoms that are shared with other forms of PTSD, say from motor accidents and so on, by looking at those similarities, it misses what is the most central issue for the combat or the veteran of war with PTSD, which is this moral and spiritual dimension. So I'm going to be talking a lot about that. I'm going to be talking about post-traumatic growth, the combat experience as an initiation onto the warrior's path, which was always understood as a pathway of moral and spiritual development through the lifespan with cultural meaning. We have some great icons that who are role models in that regard, and so on. So I'm going to touch a number of bases, but I think that's the center of what I'm going to be talking about.
Could you talk a little bit more about because you've already touched on the fact that people other than soldiers experience trauma,
right?
And can experience post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
What, though, are the specific dimensions that come with those who do serve in combat or in other potentially violent situations?
Well, I'm not sure if let's see if I address this correctly in the way you
sure.
asked it. What is common to all forms of PTSD, and this is, makes it diagnostic, are things like having been through a particularly traumatic experience, which has been life-threatening or something like that, and being preoccupied with memories or flashbacks of the experience, feeling numb, trying to avoid the experience in various ways, feeling hypervigilant, jumpy, hyper-aroused, and I think I covered those bases. What is different? And so the combat experience, or people, veterans of PTSD, certainly have the flashbacks or the intrusive memories and nightmares. They have the numbing and blunting. Many of them say they can't engage with their families. They know they love their wives, for instance, but they can't feel it anymore. They know they love the kids, but it's difficult to feel alive and truly engaged. They have that numbing. They're often hypervigilant, etc. So all that is true enough. What is specific? And this has more recently been talked about in the last few years by the Veterans Administration and so on, is the moral trauma or the moral pain that is involved. From our point of view, this is the central issue and has been, as I said, has been named and discussed as such in all traditional warrior cultures around the world. It's the trauma of participating in the appalling destructiveness that is war. Some veterans, and in the literature too, some people have said how there is something appallingly intimate about killing somebody. You might forget all sorts of encounters in your life, but that one will probably visit you every day for the rest of your life. Interestingly enough, many veterans suffer from, let's say, just I'm going to use the term PTSD as a shorthand. Many veterans suffer from PTSD, even if they were not directly in combat. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of people who load missiles onto fighter aircraft, on aircraft carriers, medics, or people who put bodies in body bags, drones pilots who often are suffering quite considerably from the wounds of war. And many of these veterans who weren't in direct, sort of immediate, in-your-face, dangerous combat, many of them feel unworthy for their suffering. They feel as though it's somehow not real and or not legitimate because they weren't in a life-threatening situation themselves. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we try to do in some of the work we do is really to legitimate their experience as a human and their guilt and their distress as a human guilt and distress. It's a burden that is carried by many, many soldiers, you know, in the Xhosa in South Africa. And as a reminder, Nelson Mandela and Chris Hani and many of the great African National Congress leaders in South Africa were Xhosa. The Xhosa used to call it the Kaneni, which is a particular knowledge or insight that the warrior has into a shadow that follows him around and never lets him forget what he's done. Mm. And we can only... Let me also say then that I think medications can help people sleep. It can help people come out of suicidal depressions without, you know, knocking medications at all. What medication, no amount of medication can do is to heal that moral wound and those sort of traumas, which need to be talked about and more ritually addressed.
Dr. Kjellquist, and I should say to our listeners, we're talking about the mental and spiritual health of veterans in anticipation of Christian Theological Seminary's 19th Annual Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference. Dr. Kjellquist, was there a reason that you decided to address this particular problem with this conference right now? I'm assuming it's not, there's a different theme to each year's conference. Why this one at this time?
Yes, well, you're quite correct that each year has a different theme. And of course, we're planning more than a year ahead. So it doesn't have to do with recent events, although recent events are certainly germane with, you know, the public being increasingly aware of conflicts around the world. I think that we just felt it was time to address this topic again. It had been at least 5 years, maybe more, since we'd done anything that specifically addressed the trauma of veterans. And I think, you know, as you ask around and talk to people, it's the 6 degrees of separation thing. Virtually everybody knows a veteran, if it's not somebody in their own family. For me, I would say my father, my uncle, a brother-in-law, you know, and you see how different conflicts affect people differently. So my brother-in-law was affected by the Vietnam War, and that seemed to be a heavier weight for him to bear than what my father and uncle had to bear in World War II, say.
I'm assuming that there are some veterans who are listening right now and are intrigued by this. If they want to attend the conference, and I'll give away the part here that the veterans definitely will like, is that when I looked at your website, veterans can attend free.
Friday night. Yes.
But could you talk about the details for other people, perhaps folks who are in a similar situation? You have a loved one who is dealing with the aftermath of war, if they want to attend.
Yes, I can say a word about the structure of the conference, and then Dr. Brook might want to follow up with what he plans to address. But we usually set it up this way, that the Friday night, and this will be Friday, April 21st at 7 p.m. at Christian Theological Seminary, that Friday night is usually the most general part of the conference, open to the public for people who don't have to be mental health providers, that just have a general interest in the topic. So I would say definitely free to veterans Friday night, and please come. We do need you to register on the CTS website so we know who's coming, but you will not be charged to attend if you're a veteran. And then Saturday morning, 9 to 11:30, We move into a segment that is more geared towards mental health professionals, people who are actually working with veterans and PTSD. And then Saturday afternoon, we have another segment, 1 to 3, which is more experiential, so that it's not just head knowledge, but it's also the providers getting a sense of how this feels to work with these issues.
You are free also to give the URL for people who do want to register.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's easy. www.cts.edu, and you'll find a link to the page about the conference, and you can register there.
And that is www.cts.edu. We're talking about veterans and mental health. My guests are Dr. Roger Brook and Dr. Felicity Kelkors. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about veterans and mental health in anticipation of next week's Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference by Christian Theological Seminary. It will feature one of my guests, Dr. Roger Brook. He's a professor of psychology and director of the Military Psychological Services at Duquesne University. My other guest who's with us here in studio, Dr. Brook is joining us by Skype, is Dr. Felicity Kelkors. She is a mental health counselor and professor at the Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center. Dr. Brook, I'm curious because I'm always curious about backstories on these things. What drew you, and I know you're from South Africa originally, what drew you to the study particularly of veterans and the healing of their mental and spiritual wounds?
I cut my professional eye teeth in South Africa in the 1980s when I worked with the victims of trauma. In fact, on both sides of the political conflict in South Africa at that time, I worked with young national servicemen coming back from the war in Angola. And I also worked with some of the adolescent black activists and kids who had been detained and traumatized by the violence in the black township areas. I thought it was all behind me, but in the early 2000s, with the scale of the problems coming back from the Middle East and my son being in the U.S. Army fighting in Iraq, in fact, he was in Iraq every year from 04 to 09, I decided to dust off those old skills or whatever, I'm looking for a metaphor, to dust them off. And I got a grant and developed a network of services. It made it possible then to train doctoral students to be able to work with veterans, to teach them something about military culture. I should also mention that as a youngster, as a national serviceman, I was a paratrooper. I joined the paratroopers to try and impress my girlfriend, and it didn't. But
didn't work.
So it didn't work. No, but it did mean that I understand military culture, and I had some experience, and it was time to get involved again. If I can, I also have a very long military history. You know, going back through many, many generations. In fact, I just recently discovered that I had soldiers on both sides of the American Revolution. So it goes back away. If I could say something
yes,
about the conference as well, when Dr. Kelkors was speaking a few minutes ago, it reminded me or prompted me to want to say that one of the unintended negative consequences of having a psychiatric diagnosis of PTSD is that it then professionalizes the treatment. You then have a stigma of mental illness, and once you've got a so-called mental illness, in quotes, you then require professional psychiatrists and psychologists and mental health counselors to so-called, if you can picture quotes around it, treat the so-called mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
If we think of this, though, not as a mental illness, but as a human universal named and ritually addressed in all traditional warrior cultures, then we can learn that in all those cultures, the being embraced, returning warriors being embraced by the local civilian community was absolutely central to homecoming and to adequate healing. So one of the things that I'm so appreciative of and excited about this conference is precisely that it brings and gathers together veterans and civilians into a single or common or shared understanding of the psychological and spiritual wounds of war. It's a process in which in a sense, the civilian community is taking responsibility for the violence and the suffering that has been done in its name. Even if we were against the war, our tax dollars paid for the bullets. You know, we all have to take responsibility for the suffering done in our name. Many veterans have this feeling, which is understandable, that they can only ever talk to other veterans. However much I understand that, ultimately one can never come home if one's only community is other veterans. Talking to civilians is essential to the process ultimately of homecoming. So that's why I'm so excited about this conference.
I want to talk a bit, because we've done shows. There's been, over the past few years, retired military people have begun a fairly active campaign of public education and lobbying about the burdens that that veterans bring back with them. And we've done a couple of shows with them, and I talk with those folks fairly frequently. And if there's a theme that runs through it, is that they feel like a lot of their suffering, there's no other way to put it, that their suffering is either ignored or forgotten.
Or marginalized.
And some of it, you know, like they lobby, for example, they'll lobby the Indiana state government, and the state legislators' response is, you know, constitutionally justifiable. They say, you know, we don't have foreign policy responsibilities here. The care of veterans, by and large, is a federal government responsibility, not ours. But it comes across to those veterans as dismissive and insensitive, which just seems to exacerbate the problem and make the conflict grow greater. What are some ways that we could minimize or lighten this load a little bit? Dr. Brook, I'd like your thoughts first, but I also want Dr. Kilcourse's on those as a culture.
First of all, John, I really liked your build-up to the question. I thought that you were absolutely right. One of the problems of having it as a federal issue, or at least of states, local communities saying that it's not really our problem because we didn't send you to war, is a kind of hand washing, and is terribly alienating for the veteran, who is usually not serving just some sort of abstraction, but also serving for the people close by and the people that he or she loved or loves. So what can we do? I think that it's wonderful when church communities get involved, have services for returning veterans. I've worked on some of those, and those are great. Families show a special interest in their veterans. In schools, there are now some best practices for what colleges and schools can do for veterans. Integrating them into classrooms and into college life, and so on. So I think there's a lot we can do out there. As families, I think really show an interest without wanting to be too pushy. I mean, these things have to be, you know, each veteran is different. But I think that when one shows a genuine interest, that can make a difference. The great psychiatrist who wrote Achilles in Vietnam and Odysseus in America, the psychiatrist Jonathan Shea, said that what a returning veteran needs most of all, is not a mental health professional, but a community for whom his or her experience matters.
Dr. Kelkors.
John, you asked me earlier why this theme at this time, and I did feel the theme was overdue, but also the precipitating instance was that I heard Dr. Brooks speak at a conference that I was attending 2 years ago, and the way he approached this topic I thought was particularly helpful and useful. I was alluding just now to the difference between the experience of World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans, and now we have Iraq veterans. I think the way the war in which you participated is seen by the civilian population affects how you're received as you return home. And I have to imagine, you know, not being a veteran myself, that it's much harder to come home from a conflict where people are saying, well, there were no weapons of mass destruction, we shouldn't have been in there, now we've made a mess in the Middle East. You as a veteran, as a service member, are going out to do a job that you've been given to do. And I will say that I come at this as a Quaker minister, mm-hmm. and as somebody who's part of a peace church, mm-hmm. I feel that it's important for us to realize that we're all morally responsible. When we as a nation say, yes, we want to fight this war, it's not just on the people who were on combat. It's on all of us. As John said, you know, we're all paying for the bullets. And if we really care about having peace in our country and elsewhere in the world, then we have to be thinking about what is it that promotes conflict and how do we heal post-conflict? Because if you don't have the healing, then the wounds of war just replicate. And I do want to say about families, I think families often don't know how to cope with some of the symptoms that Dr. Brooke mentioned, you know, being withdrawn. We know that there's a high suicide rate for veterans. Mm-hmm. And we also know that the military culture, you know, would not encourage somebody to say, I'm upset, I'm troubled, that they would tend to keep it inside. People who don't talk about suicidal feelings are much more likely to actually commit suicide, and people with guns have a very lethal means to do it. So what I always say to family members is, if you're concerned about your family member, you as a family need to get support for yourselves to figure out how to help this person. Because it's hard to help a person who won't talk about what they're feeling. So sometimes the whole family needs support for that.
How much of this, I'm going to ask both of your thoughts on this. Dr. Brooke, how much of this becomes a kind of vicious cycle or circle in that it is almost a cliche of the veteran now, a pop culture cliche of the veteran who goes away, has a life-altering experience, often for the worst, doing something, and then, you know, has trouble reintegrating into society, in part because the perception is that the veteran's experience almost is one of being shunned. I guess where I'm going with this is that it seems like this pattern, it started with Vietnam, but it continues, obviously, through some of the Middle East conflicts and all of that. It is almost, as I say, a pop culture cliche. Is there something about it that is almost self-fulfilling, or is there a way we can break it?
I really think that's a good question, and I do think that we need to break it. In fact, I've been feeling slightly uneasy as we've been talking, because we've been focusing so much on the suffering and the marginalization and the trauma and the difficulties. In fact, most veterans have very, very conflicted feelings that, in fact, do very well. There's even with veterans who are suffering profoundly, there's often an incredible sense of pride in missions accomplished or in their ability to be competent under fire, to know that they had the trust of their buddies, to have served their country. These things are a source of enormous pride and dignity and strength. And when we focus too much on just the negatives, we really miss that. It prompts me to say that so many veterans, and again, this is something we draw from on traditional warrior cultures, where the returning veteran was honored then as a warrior, and he was initiated onto what was called the spiritual or the warrior's path, which was this pathway of moral and spiritual development through the lifespan that is recognized and honored by the civilian community. So that it is there's a very reciprocal and intimate relationship between the community and the warrior, who it is understood has had a life experience and knows something about the sort of the extremes of the human condition, about good and evil, life and death, courage and cowardice, and so on and so on, and can bring these lessons learned back into the civilian community. One of the functions then of old warriors is to suppress violence. They have a moral authority that they can never be accused of being simply cowards or something like that. And so when they say, no, we shouldn't go to war, or we should be careful or suppress violence, they are respected because of that. Let me just, I say more about that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Just think of some of the old moral authorities in our own society here. On different sides of the political spectrum, the young submarine commander became President Carter, whose work around the world promoting and providing infrastructure for developing democracies has been so inspiring. Or Colin Powell, who has enormous moral authority, which was not, I think, tarnished much at all by the fact that he misled the United Nations. I think everybody understands that he meant what he said. In my own country of origin, Nelson Mandela, this extraordinary spiritual leader, was also the commander of the military wing of the African National Congress. Go back in history, St. Francis of Assisi was a veteran of two tours. In his first tour, he was a POW. In his second tour, he had what we would now call a mental breakdown, which led to his transformation and the birth of the Franciscan order. There are just numerous examples around the world. Yitzhak Rabin of Israel, the commander of the Israelis, whose tactical brilliance saved Israel in 1967 in the Six-Day War, but who led Israel to the Oslo Peace Accord in 1992. And we might wonder how the whole Middle East might look very different if he hadn't been assassinated in 95. I mean, we can go on and on like this, these stories of veteran combat veterans or veterans who have used their experience for an extraordinary transformation that is honored by the wider society. Now, many veterans, I think, have that honor in our local communities and families, even if they're not, you know, on the national stage. So, you know, there are folks in our local churches. They coach Little League baseball. They work in farmers markets, et cetera, et cetera. But they have that place in the community which is honored and revered and is a place of dignity and growth.
Dr. Kelkhorst.
I'd like to follow up on that point of the moral and spiritual authority of people who've been through combat. I'm not old enough to remember Eisenhower, but Eisenhower was the first one to talk about the military industrial complex and how much of a problem it is if we base our economy on military production, essentially. And I was also thinking of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who came up with his spiritual exercises while he was recovering from war wounds.
We are talking about the mental and spiritual health of veterans in anticipation of a conference at Christian Theological Seminary next week. It's the annual Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference. It's going to be featuring a lecture from one of my guests, Dr. Roger Brook, called The Soldier's Heart, A Moral and Spiritual Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Again, my guests are Dr. Roger Brook. He is professor of psychology and director of the Military Psychological Services at Duquesne University, and Dr. Felicity Kilcourse, a mental health counselor and professor at the Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about veterans' mental and spiritual health in anticipation of Christian Theological Seminary's 19th annual Psychotherapy and Spirituality Conference. As part of that conference, one of my guests, Dr. Roger Brook, who is a professor of psychology and director of the Military Psychological Services at Duquesne University, is going to be delivering a lecture called The Soldier's Heart, A Moral and Spiritual Calling. My other guest, and Dr. Brook is joining us by Skype, my other guest is Dr. Felicity Kilcourse, a mental health counselor and professor at the Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what this listener has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. You're on the air.
Well, they were talking about no parades. I've heard that before. The difference I see is that during World War II, I remember that we gave up sugar, we gave up beef, we gave up butter. And so when the war ended, not only did we celebrate the men returning, but we celebrated a return to our life as we knew it, our meals and being able to get shoes and things like that. And we didn't give up anything for the Vietnam War or any other war since then.
Thanks very much for the call and the observation.
The observation, may I say, the observation is so interesting because it shows that in World War II, everybody had a stake in it. The difference between civilians and those who were serving was not nearly as sharp a distinction. We all had a stake in it, and so I think that's just really important. It reminds me that, you know, the Apaches of the Southwest apparently had a whole second language, which the whole community would speak in times of war.
Wow. Yeah, I was struck by the caller's point as well, because, you know, I remember my mother talking about what they had to give up during World War II. And of course, you know, some countries suffered immediately, and we did in Pearl Harbor. But more recent wars, there's been a greater and greater divide between those who go into combat and those who don't. You know, the Vietnam War, there was a draft. Now there's no draft. It's not as big an impact on society as the draft was. And civilians haven't really had to give up much of anything. And then we wonder why we have a big deficit problem. Maybe we should sacrifice if we feel the war is worth it, because otherwise it makes it too easy to go to war. We all feel like, well, it doesn't affect me. Somebody else is doing it. It's far away. The only thing that puts us in touch with us now are the images on the news. And I think when people saw, you know, those children dying and being gassed, it brought it home. But it's easy to forget when you haven't been in combat, when you're not a warrior, what it really costs to go to war.
How much? Because I think the caller's point's an important one, and one that probably merits a little more exploration here. Does this not at some level, I'm trying to think how I want to frame this question, because I think there is an insight here. What we're really talking here is about segregating the experience of war. Then, and that then, you know, as Dr. Brook pointed out, in some cultures that can elevate the warriors. In other cultures, though, and perhaps not in ours, it has not always done that. You know, because segregation can work in the other way too, which is to demean the people whose experiences are being segregated. I can see Dr. Kelcourse leaning into the microphone, so I'm going to let her have the first crack at that, but I would like to hear Dr. Brook's thoughts, too.
Yes, definitely go to Dr. Brook next. But my thought was about some psychological terms, which I think are valid here, and it's not about saying, you know, that the veterans are wounded and we're not. I think that there's a wound to empathy and a wound to your basic humanity. If you say, oh, those people are going out to do violence and it doesn't affect me, you know, who sent them? We sent them. We should feel responsible for what is done. And if we don't, then we're kind of washing our hands of something that we really should have moral responsibility for.
Dr. Brook.
I don't know if this quite addresses it, but I'm sort of prompted to say this, which is that the experience of war will be, when for the veteran, the experience of war will be passed on to one's family and to the next generation. The challenge is to pass it on as a story, as something that then can become part of the family's legacy. Children then will feel like they know their father. Wives will know their husbands and husbands their wives. If we try to protect our families and the space of the home from any of the memories of war, what happens, unfortunately, is that we communicate by impact, and the impact remains unintelligible, diffuse, a bit disorganized. People don't understand what's happening, and we rob our children of ever getting really to know us. It can lead to all sorts of problems. Obviously, that doesn't mean you talk about everything that comes to mind or everything that happened. You talk about things in ways that are age appropriate, and so on. People don't need to know everything, but certainly being able to talk to some extent about one's experience and to pass it on to the family and the next generation is very helpful. You know, otherwise, when I say communicate by impact, I've known wives, the wives of veterans, to be having nightmares that turn out to be very similar to their husbands, their veteran husbands. I've known the case of a young fellow who decided to join the Marines, and he started having nightmares of jungle warfare. And there was a particular scene that came up over and over again. He told his father, who was a Vietnam veteran, and his father was stunned because it was his father's recurring nightmare. There are some very strange things that happen which are communicated in a really diffuse way. A study was done some years ago which simply looked at a sort of a symptom checklist, like depressive symptoms and blunting and so on and so on. And it found that when the veteran, the man or woman veteran, was having a set of symptoms, the spouse was checking off the same boxes. So our empathy can be a place of suffering, is going to be a place of suffering, but it doesn't have to be a symptomatic suffering. It doesn't have to be a kind of a depressive illness or something like that. It can simply be an open-hearted empathy that is also an opening of the heart in love and honor. And that's a celebration as much as a suffering.
Probably, given that we've talked about this, Dr. Kelcourse, we would be remiss. There are doubtless people listening out here who are experiencing some of this trauma. If we didn't give them some places that they could reach out for help, do you have some numbers or places that they can contact?
Yeah, I love listening to the radio, and I hope those who are listening, if you're either family members who are not quite sure what to do for someone who might need some support or need support themselves, or especially if you're worried that somebody might be suicidal. And following on Dr. Brook's statement, you want to get people to talk about their feelings. Don't let them sit in isolation. It's important for people to say how they feel and for you to ask them. So just to give you some general numbers, there's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. And locally at the CTS Counseling Center, we see people for low fee. We see people who have affordable care, or of course you can always do self-pay. We don't take a lot of other kinds of insurance, but For those in those categories, our number at the Counseling Center is 317-924-5205. 317-924-5205. I would say don't suffer in silence if you know something's wrong. Get some support.
We are talking about the mental and spiritual health of veterans. If you
John,
want to join the conversation, yes, Dr. Sorry, Rick, I want to try to get to a couple of callers.
Since we mentioned suicide, I want to reach out also to the folks who might be in that situation. When we are suicidal, suicide feels like a possible answer. Really, it is a measure of how desperate we are. Almost everybody who takes that first step by telling somebody, reaching for the phone, something, if you take that first step, almost everybody is no longer in severe danger within days or weeks, and certainly within a few months, the overwhelming majority, way over 90%, are no longer suicidal and are glad they survived.
We've gotten an email question from a listener, and if you want to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimitswfyi.org. This listener says, I am a veteran. Is there some way to get a copy of this interview? Yes, it will be posted online at wfyi.org probably a couple hours after we go off the air. And then says also the CTS conference website mentions Friday night is free for veterans, but when you go to register, they only allow you to register by paying $70. Please clarify.
Wow. I'm sorry. That's a problem with our website. I'll respond to that. If anybody has a problem registering for free, I'm going to give you an email address. Apologies to Linda Bush, but please email lbush, L-B-U-S-H, at CTS, for Christian Theological Seminary, .edu, lbush at cts.edu. Say, I'm a veteran. I want to register.
David, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Crawl. Your shows are much appreciated. I listen pretty much any time you're on. I know I've called many times. This is one that's personal to me. I have some experience with suicide and working at the suicide hotline, the Marion County suicide hotline. And I think I just got a comment and a question. The comment is, it seems to me that in my study and my because I'm fascinated by World War II and the veterans from there and what happened with them. It seems to me that they were either they went to the top, and that doesn't mean they got rich. It just means they went to the top, they came back, and they were better than they were when they left, or they went to the bottom and they came back much worse than they were when they left. And it seems that the ratios have changed now with the onset of the types of wars that we're fighting, political wars that come up because not for good reason. In World War II, they had outstanding reasons to be there, and it seems those veterans seem to, as a ratio, more of them came back and were okay with problems, of course, but then there were the ones that had problems and were suicidal and things of that nature. With the newer wars, that's different. That ratio has changed about 60-40 in my estimation, and that's just from my anecdotal work. But the question that I have is, what can the folks that are on the two professors, I love what you guys are saying, but how can we advocate more with our government to do more for our veterans? These guys deserve us to bow on bended knee for what they did for us, and we treat them so badly as a country. I just don't get it. And I wonder if there's more that we can do to advocate for them.
Thanks very much for calling the question.
I'm going to say that I thank you so much for your question and also for your energy and your work. This country needs people like you. One of the things that has been of real concern to me and others that I know is that I think I'm right in saying that there are fewer veterans in Congress now than there have been for more than a century.
And it's been 25 years since we've had a a combat veteran in the White House, too.
And not having a draft. I mean, nobody wants their kid to be drafted. But on the other hand, the whole society participates in a different way when there's a draft.
It was a collective experience. We are talking about the mental and spiritual health of veterans. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm a combat guy from Vietnam, and I was tested as a borderline severe for PTSD. And I went through cognitive therapy treatment at the VA, and it was okay. It just got me stabilized, but it wasn't taking anywhere. So I started looking for answers of my own, and I found some things that I wanted to pass on. One is a book called Little Pieces of Light, written by Sister Joyce Rupp. I think she's a Carmelite. It's only about 80 pages long, and she wrote that as her answer of how she got out of severe depression, disabling depression. And it's like a spiritual how-to guide to get out of a bad place. I used it to get out of PTSD places. Mm. And it's just been invaluable spiritually.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks,
and
Jeff.
Sharing that. Thank you. Yes.
Yes, I just wanted to say I'm glad that you're lifting up the spiritual piece, because when I talk to people about healing, any kind of healing, I always say there's mind, there's body, and there's spirit. And sometimes if we get too psychological, we think it's all in your mind. You can suffer in your body because of emotional distress. And spiritually, this is often the way that people find to get out of the difficulties they have physically and mentally. If you find a spiritual lifeline, and this is part of what Dr. Brooks is going to be talking about, the spiritual aspect of community supporting veterans.
Dr. Brooks, I'm going to give you the last word, and we've only got about 30 seconds left. What is something that you see someone suffering from this kind of stress? What is something, a concrete step you can make to help? You can take to help?
I would say that it's try and find, there are many, many people who can help. They might be ministers or counselors at the VA, therapists in private practice. If you find somebody who's not very helpful, that's probably a personal issue, training, and that doesn't represent the whole field. There are many organizations run by veterans as well as run by civilians, both with outside of the VA as well as the VA itself, that are providing really wonderful work. Soldier's Heart, various Wounded Warrior type organizations, and so on.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Roger Brook, and Dr. Felicity Kelkhorst, for what's been a fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank all of our listeners as well and invite them to come back and join us again. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John.